I'm Ralph Dobelli, and the book is called The Art of the Good Life. I have a website, and that's dobelli.com, dobelli.com.
Talking today to Ralph Dobelli about his delightful book, The Art of the Good Life. You've made your task more palatable by breaking it down, sort of your nuggets of wisdom, as it were, to short essays, which I think was brilliant.
Yeah, originally it was thought to be a newspaper column. Actually, it was a newspaper column. And in a newspaper, you only have a limited amount of space to express what you really want to express. And that's why the chapters came out very small, which is also good. The readers tell me, because it's more palatable to read short chapters than long ones.
It certainly is, and people's attention spans are so limited, so this is perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, my previous books have been short chapters, and I just like them more as a reader. And also, it's better to write, because you have to condense what you want to say in a shorter amount of space. That way, it needs more concentration from the writer to really condense it down to just a few pages. But it's a good exercise also for the person who writes it.
Your questions are age-old questions that you're answering and you're tackling, really. What does it mean to live a good life? And why did you tackle such a big subject?
Yeah, well, my previous books have been dealing with questions of thinking, the art of thinking clearly. And I wanted to broaden it out. I mean, thinking errors are a big subject in life, but I wanted to broaden it out to make sure I don't fall into life errors, you know, errors of living or misliving. And the question how to live one's a good life is a question that has bothered me for a long time. And, you know, I'm around 50, so it was about time to really get into that question. Yeah. Now, if you go and set out to get answers, the first place you go to are philosophers. Mm-hmm. But just walk into any philosophy department of any university and ask, you know, professor, you know, how should I live my life? You will be disappointed, because these people are very theoretical. I mean, they know exactly what Wittgenstein or some other philosopher meant with a certain word on page 256, but they can't really tell you how to live a good life. And that was different in the past. In the past, philosophy was about that question. If you go back 2,000 or 2,500 years, it was always the center of philosophy was always that question. I wanted to bring that back to.
When you mentioned your other book about thinking clearly, how can you think clearly when you're bombarded with all this stuff? I mean, the news is happening all the time, and there's so much going on. You have a problem thinking clearly, going back to your old book. And how can you live a great life if you can't even think?
Exactly. I mean, these two books, The Art of Thinking Clearly and The Art of the Good Life, they really go together. And much of the good life has to do with thinking clearly. Much of the good life has to do with interpreting the world in a constructive way. So you're not bombarded with negative emotions or negative news or worries that will never materialize. So a lot of it has to do with thinking.
Although your life seems to be about taking a shortcut to answering the big questions, it really is a long path before you get to your own individual way of living the good life. How did you get there?
I just set out to establish a toolbox, a mental toolbox. And whenever I'm in a certain situation, I can pull out a couple of tools that I know will work or will most likely work, will most likely lead to a better life for me. Mm. And so the book has 52 chapters. So you can say there are 52 tools in this mental toolbox, or I didn't use that metaphor. It just came to me after writing the book. It's like a Swiss Army knife with 52 tools. You know, being Swiss, I need to use that metaphor. But a Swiss Army knife with 52 tools, you can go through life, and depending on the situation, you will never need all the tools on that Swiss Army knife, but you can always use one or two to improve the situation. And that's that's kind of my metaphor, how the book was structured. Mm. So whatever situation I'm finding in, for example, I have a negative emotion. I have a really toxic emotion, envy, for example, or I worry, or I, you know, I worry about the reputation, what other people think about me. Mm-hmm. Then I pull out one or two of those tools, I think it through, and automatically I feel much better.
I didn't mean to be a smart aleck and say, Rolf, that you had all the answers, but I meant to say was you seem to have a peaceful way of going about things now, or you've come to some peace in your life.
Yes, that certainly is the case. By reading, you know, the latest research on psychology, and also reading the old philosophers on what makes a good life, it makes you much calmer. So. Yeah. I have come to a much calmer life. I'm not completely there where I want to be. It's probably a lifelong journey. Yeah. I'll probably never become a sage that is totally tranquil inside. But my path is towards inner peace, tranquility. I think the core of a good life, one of those few cores, is to have equanimity, inner peace, tranquility. What the Greeks called ataraxia. The Greeks had a wonderful term. It's called ataraxia, which translates roughly into tranquility.
From that to parking tickets, I loved your essay about happily paying parking tickets. Would you tell that story?
Sure, happy to. So we get parking tickets a lot in Switzerland, just like in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And whenever I park the car, just for, you know, a minute, I go up to the office, forget something, grab it, come down. There's a police guy, you know, writing a parking ticket. And it used to really drive me nuts. And I tried to negotiate with these police guys. And you know how that goes. Yeah. I mean, there's no way you can discuss that issue with them. And then you feel small and you don't sleep well. Yeah. So my wife and I, we have a different strategy. And at the beginning of the year, we determine a certain amount that goes to a good cause, to a foundation at the end of the year, minus all the parking tickets. So whenever we get a parking ticket in Switzerland, it's like $40. Mm-hmm. Then that foundation at the end of the year, you know, receives $40 less. The $40 go to the government as a parking fine, which is also kind of a good cause, and everybody's happy. So I'm not concerned about parking tickets anymore. I'm not getting nervous anymore if I see a police person writing something, a parking ticket. And that is one way of interpreting the world in just a different way, so you're not getting nervous. I don't spend more time, or I don't spend more money on parking tickets than before. It's just I don't get nervous anymore.
Yeah.
And that is actually a thinking error, and that is called mental accounting. But it's a thinking error applied in a positive way.
I love that.
There are a lot of little interpretations that you can make in your own life to have a better life. For example, it also works with time. When I go shopping and I'm on the grocery store and I'm in the line and waiting, and you know, 3 minutes waiting, I get nervous, or I used to get nervous, and now I set myself a limit, and that's like 10 minutes. Everything waiting time below 10 minutes is white noise for me. I'm not concerned about that anymore. So, and if I set myself a conscious limit of 10 minutes, that I don't get nervous anymore, you know, then I'm not getting, you know, all the bad hormones in my body that makes my life shorter. So I live longer. And in that additional couple of months of living, all the waiting time of my life can fit into that. So it pays to have a certain limit of spending or of waiting time where you just say, that's it. 10 yeah. minutes, I'm not going to get nervous.
Yeah, I like that one too. And you also sometimes shun technology, don't you?
Yes. Technology always comes with the promise of making your life more efficient or making your life faster. But if you make the complete calculation, oftentimes it's the contrary to that.
Yeah.
It is an effect that was discovered in the 70s. Somebody was trying to figure out what is the average speed of a car. And in the 70s, they figured out that the average speed of a car is about 6 or 5 miles an hour. Mm. And how did they calculate this? by not just taking into consideration the driving time and the distance, but also the time you have to work for the car, the time you have to work for the car insurance, the time you have to work for all the repairs, and so on. And if you include all that time, then actually the average speed of a car is about 5 miles per hour, which is about walking, brisk walking speed. And today it might even be shorter because you have way more traffic and the same amount of roads than you had in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So if you make the entire calculation, many times technology actually doesn't help you that much. It actually is a cost. The same thing you see with digital photography. You know, digital photography, I remember I was so happy when digital photography came about. It didn't cost me anything anymore to shoot a picture. Mm. It was instantly there. I could shoot as many pictures as I wanted. But if you include all the costs, which means the backup servers and the upgrades of technology, the Photoshop upgrades and everything you need to have in order to keep up with the technology, the cost of a picture is tremendous.
Yeah, you're right.
So people don't people usually don't take into consideration all these backups, upgrades, learning new software, installing new software until everything works. They usually don't take that cost at the time into consideration.
Yeah. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed The Art of the Good Life so much. Anything you want to mention that I didn't ask you about with the book?
One of the simplest tools on that Swiss Army knife of 52 tools is the 5-second no by Charlie Munger. That's an investor.
Yeah.
And I used to be bombarded. I still get bombarded with people who want something from me. Could you do this or could you do that? Could you write a little essay here? Could you hold a little talk here? Could you do me this favor? Could you do me that favor? And I always used to say yes, because I don't want to be a bad person. And then, you know, I, of course, want to be loved. Until I realized that for the most part, I said yes, and then I couldn't really fulfill that promise. And then I had to backtrack and come up with excuses and basically lie to the other person, lie to myself. So I totally switched gears on that. Today, my standard answer is no. Somebody asks me a favor, I say no. I give it 5 seconds, and then I say no. I give an answer. I don't let the people hanging, but the general answer is no, unless it's really, really, really something special. And that way, I can really fulfill my promises. If I then say yes, I will then really do it.
Yeah.
So people can trust my word, and I'm not going to get into a situation where I have to lie to myself or lie to other people. So that's called the 5-second no.
I like that, and that alone could give you a good life. When you think
Absolutely.
That's definitely
absolutely. And,
great.
You know, people can do it without reading this chapter, but I needed a term for it. I needed a word, a label for it. And once I had that label, and again, that comes from Charlie Munger, once I had that label of the 5-second note, now I feel much freer to apply it, and I don't feel bad anymore.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the book and talking to you this morning. Thank you so much for not only writing the book, but for doing the interview today.
Thank you so much, Pat. Thanks for calling.